You're listening to the Getting Smart Podcast. I'm Shani Carruthers. I am constantly around children. If I'm not talking about Legos, I'm discussing in depth all the different dinosaur names, what fortresses are and are not, and how to practice meditation and learn yoga. And all of these conversations are with a five-year-old. For him, learning started at home, but with the support of his school community, he already feels clear about what it takes to be a builder when he grows up. Whatever he wants to learn, he teaches himself or he'll seek out someone to teach him. As a result, he's continually moving along the learn-to-earn continuum. I am so excited to have this timely conversation about ensuring that all students feel educationally ready and are supported by their community and have the necessary resources to ensure equitable experiences and outcomes. Today, I am joined by Stacy Wall Schweikhart, CEO of Learn to Earn Dayton. Stacy brings more than 21 years of public sector leadership and a deep network of partners and resources to the CEO role. We're also joined by Dr. Thomas Lastly, Director, Policy and Advocacy of Montgomery County Educational Service Center and founder of Learn to Earn Dayton. Tom focuses on shaping policies and practices that impact P through 16 educational attainment. Stacy, Tom, thank you so much for being here today. And first, just thank you for your service of all you've given to education.
Shani, thank you very much for asking us to come and share some of our work here in Montgomery County, Ohio.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Thank you both. Stacy, I'll start with you. And I just want to first, you know, learn a little bit more about Learn to Earn Dayton. So can you talk to me about the core mission and vision of Learn to Earn Dayton and how these have evolved over time?
Sure. So Learn to Earn Dayton is a 501c3 nonprofit organization doing place-based cradle-to-career work here in Montgomery County, Ohio, with influence and impact throughout the state of Ohio. Our purpose is to ensure that all of our students and their families in our region can thrive, regardless of race, gender, or zip code.
And what I would add to that is that we believe that certain performance metrics are critical for any organization to track, kindergarten readiness, third grade reading, eighth grade math, high school graduation, college enrollment, and college graduation are performance metrics that we track and publish annually. And it's through those that the community can really see if it's creating and sustaining the intellectual capital that it needs for economic vitality.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you both are just constantly thinking through what school needs to be or what learning needs to be for the youngest of learners all the way through high school and beyond. And so as you think about your core mission and vision and what you imagine it to be and then what it is and even what you think it might need to be as we think about the future of learning and the future of work, what has that evolution been and what do you think you're going to try to move toward?
So I think Learn to Earn under Tom's leadership has been around for about a decade, a little more than a decade. And over the course of the work of our organization, you know, I think in the early years, there were targeted interventions in partnership with K-12 districts, higher education institutions, community-based organizations. And we still do that, really looking at pilot programs where we are testing and incubating a new approach for learning for our students. Where I think our work is going is to continue doing that, to be more bold about the things that we are trying to prove about a different way for our students and their families, but also really, really stepping up as a leader in the space of data, statewide, and policy work. That if we're really going to transform the systems and the multiple systems that intersect to serve our students, we have to be using data to influence policy decisions and funding streams.
And Tom, that's not a quick process.
It's not. And I think one of the things that people need to understand is that for each of the performance metrics that that a community measures, for example, college enrollment, you should have a strategy or strategies to try to impact that. So FAFSA completion impacts college enrollment. Third grade reading is one of our strategies, and we've embraced the science of reading and ensuring that all of our partners have really effectively implemented the science of reading to try to impact the third grade reading proficiency metric. So for listeners, I think that's one thing to think about is what performance metrics are you trying to move? What strategies do you have in place to try to move those metrics?
And our best advice, really, when you're getting started in this work, is to look at the data and pick one place in the data where it is clear you need to see improvement in outcomes, and particularly places where you need to see closing of gaps, of the disparities between students based on their race or identity. And get people around a table, get cross-sector partners around a table to say, here's this number, how do we work together?
Yeah, I love how you broke that into like a really bite-sized piece, because I'm sure you all probably have even experienced just like looking at all of the data, feeling completely overwhelmed, and then also trying to strategize around how do I communicate this to the community so that I can also get their buy-in. And I'm sure one of the ways you all have done that are with the different programs and strategies that you all have around your Cradle to Career program. What were some of those key programs and initiatives for that program that you felt like you kind of, the different levers that you had to pull in order to really move that forward and make it really effective for students and the community, et cetera?
So I'll share one, and then I'm going to ask Tom to share one at the other end of the Cradle to Career continuum. The one I'll share is at the very beginning of the continuum for kindergarten readiness. 2014, Learn to Earn piloted a new approach for preschool, making it possible for all four-year-olds in the pilot community to have an opportunity to attend a high-quality preschool. We proved that that approach could work. And we worked through all of the procedural elements, all of the communication with parents, all of the things you have to do when you're building a program that is not only sustainable, but scalable. And so we did that in one community. The next year, we branched out to include another one. Fast forward, the initiative, which was called Preschool Promise, was included in a citywide income tax levy. It now has permanent public funding from both the city and the county, and so successful, scaled so much that it actually spun off to be its own organization that is still running, and it's really targeted at improving our metrics on kindergarten readiness.
Yeah, and you all were already kind of going down the path of getting like those, again, just those little bite-sized action steps of what people can do. As I'm listening, you talk about the permanent funding that you were able to achieve in order to ensure equity for all of the four-year-olds. How does this happen? I know you talked about like data and policy, but if you were just kind of bring it back just a little bit for our listeners who just really needed maybe some concrete steps, how do those things happen? How do you ensure that Pathways becomes part of the culture and not just an option? How do you get permanent funding for things that feel like they really matter, but isn't always easy to get that permanency?
So what I will tell you is what I always share about this work. It is 99% relationship. And so the relationships that we have with our local districts and higher education institutions, the relationships that we have with national partners that put us at the table for an opportunity like Accelerated, the relationships that we, primarily Tom, has with chancellors of higher education institutions, state leaders, policymakers, legislators. It is not an understatement to say that when legislative teams in Ohio are looking at making changes to things that impact education, Tom is on speed dial for what does this language need to look like. They trust Tom. They trust our team. And so it really is, truthfully, if we're going to get down to what does it take, it takes relationships and it takes trust.
The only thing I would, I think Stacy captured that quite well. The only thing I would add is, you know, Jim Collins had the notion of making sure you have the right people on the bus. And, you know, those partnerships that she talks about, those relationships, developing that trust, all that's contingent on having the right people on your team so that you know that the work can be done effectively and efficiently and with fidelity. So I'd encourage others who are getting ready to do this work, make sure you've got the right team in place to build a sustainable programmatic initiative.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. And, you know, as you're thinking about that outward trust, I'm sure there's a lot of like internal trust that has to happen within that team that you all were just talking about, a lot of probably rethinking, you know, reflecting, et cetera. But as you all implemented what you're doing, like just based on your experiences of mapping competencies needed for certain careers back through elementary school, can you share an example of what your team learned and just like maybe any changes that you had to make throughout the process?
Well, I think the key thing is exactly what you included in the question is going all the way back to elementary school. You know, if you're starting in high school, for many students, it's too late. And maybe not too late, but you miss opportunities. And so I think what we have integrated into our blueprint for this work is intentional career exploration activities early in elementary school. And one of the key things for us is to involve industry leaders in designing and implementing those. It's really pushing the edge. It's not asking a teacher to do an activity in a classroom. But when I talk about shared ownership, having those industry leaders come in and actually lead those activities.
I nicely captured, Stacy, and I think that's one of the things you have to, anyone doing this work has to understand. You really have to think systemically. And some of that systemic thinking relates to just not discovering kids when they become high school students. You've got to think about students throughout the pipeline. How are we trying to touch those who are very young, birth to three? How are we trying to touch those who are in preschool? How are we trying to touch those who are in those elementary grades? Our country underinvests in significant ways. We underinvest in young learners, and we pay a price for that when it comes to trying to create a next generation workforce. Stacy and I are committed through our work to try to touch policies and practices at the prenatal to three, as well as policies and practices that go from the primary grades to high school and college. Unless you're thinking those terms, you are not going to move the metrics in your community.
One of the other interesting areas of work that is a reality here in Dayton and Montgomery County in Ohio, but I know across the country, we have to be working as a community with industry leaders, with higher ed institutions, with credentialing organizations, to have a strategy for adults in our communities who need skills, training, credentials, degrees, for them to be ready for the jobs that are emerging and rapidly growing here in our region. And so that reskilling and figuring out, there really isn't, you know, in our country, we have a system for education, which certainly, you know, is not perfect, but we have one. But once you pass through a certain gateway, what does the system look like for you? How do you reenter? How do you get an assessment as an adult about what your career interests or aptitudes are and how they might align with opportunities that perhaps you've never considered? And so I think that that's another part of our work, and it's critical for our workforce. You know, in Ohio overall, our population is not growing, and certainly it's not growing at the pace to keep up with job growth. And so our alternative really is to make sure that our adult workforce, post-education institutions, know what the path looks like to get back to do what they need to do to make those jobs and those careers a reality.
Sounds like it's a loop, you know, where everybody has to really be like flowing and working together constantly. I want to circle back as you were talking about U-Science in the middle school and understanding the interest and the aptitude at that level. And then you were talking about the career awareness in the elementary school. How important is self-awareness in elementary school, even before you begin career awareness?
We've had a lot of conversations with our partners about self-awareness, about socio-emotional learning, and about resiliency. And that we see as an element of this pathways work that it is critical that we ensure elementary students, as they transition to middle school, as they transition to high school, have not only the career exploration opportunities, but also have what historically have been talked about as soft skills. But it really is the resiliency and building that baseline of workforce readiness. And how are we integrating that into our systems? And how the other thing is, how are we using our partners who support our students in out-of-school time, in either summer or after school, in work-based learning opportunities, to help to foster those skills and that resiliency that's so critical? We've designed these pathways of a sequence of courses when students are in high school, and then an additional year or just a little bit more than that to reach the degree that they need in that pathway post high school. But there's a part of our work that involves making sure that the students who start these courses as ninth graders have what it takes to both academically perform, but then to also not have an overburden of stress or pressure or all the other things that start compounding their other areas of academic performance. We, as part of our work over the last couple of years with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Accelerate Ed, did extensive student and parent empathy interviews to hear their experiences and to hear when we talked about parts of our model or what it could look like, what was their reaction to that? What did they get excited about and what did they get concerned about? And what additional things they would need to know what opportunities are available, to know how to explore those and how to succeed in those. All critical parts of this design work.
Yeah, and throughout this, you all have, really talked about the importance of community and partners. And so how do you all, or how does Learn to Earn Dayton collaborate with the local schools, government, the higher education, other organizations?
So that is ingrained into everything that we do. We are a collective impact organization, and we don't do any of our work on our own. I mean, it really is in deep partnership, and it is aligning all of those different systems that intersect to serve our students and families. And so really starting to look at those trends of those concentrations and building the pathways that match the interest and aptitudes of a vast number of students versus asking the students to direct themselves towards what's available based on industry demand.
We also, Stacy and I, thanks to our relationship with the Montgomery County Education Service Center, we meet with the superintendents of all the school districts in Montgomery County once a month. And because of that relationship that we have with those superintendents, we're able to talk about common problems, focus on goals that collectively we want to try to achieve. That has been a very, very special relationship for both Stacy and myself, being able to work with our local education service center to facilitate those conversations with the key educational leaders in our county. I encourage anyone who's doing this work to find ways to regularly meet with your education partners to make sure that you have ongoing conversations about issues of interest.
I'm glad you surfaced that, Tom. As you were talking about that, I was thinking that's great, and that happens only in a few places sometimes, because sometimes, when you get those different groups together, maybe they aren't willing to be as transparent for like the real work to be done. How, and Stacey, I know you're talking about like relationship and trust, but Tom, do you have any other like pieces of how to build that transparency so that the community can, and those partners can really come together to move things forward?
The only other suggestion I have, and I think Stacey and I have both been focused on this, is find as many different vehicles as you can to access the voice of the people that you're working with. That might be that you're serving on boards. That might be that you're going to town meetings that those other partners are having. People need to see that you are thinking beyond yourself. And if you look at the schedule that Stacy has or that I have, I think you would see that there's a fair amount of time that we devote just to listening to the voices and the concerns of the people we're trying to impact. I think without that, your work is going to be significantly compromised. You're never going to be happy with your outcomes. People need to see you're invested in them, and that's the way they invest in you, is to see that you've invested in them.
Yeah. Stacy, tell us about the PACE navigators. How are they trained, and what role do they play in this work, both day to day and then in this evolving idea for the future?
Sure. So PACE is the acronym for our blueprint design that came out of the Accelerate Ed work, and it's pathways for accelerated college and career experiences. And what we found, and this really, really derived from our conversations with those empathy interviews with students, with families, and with educators. An individual teacher, a building administrator, or a guidance counselor do not have the time in the day to also be serving the role to help make sure that students are continuing to explore and align to a pathway that is right for them. We really found that we needed a new position within districts. And the sole purpose of those navigators is to coordinate those early elementary career exploration and awareness activities, to lead the implementation of U-Science, to lead the individualized processing with students and their families about their U-Science results and what is available and possible, what the opportunities are. And then once they're in the high school, the actual coursework, they are the people that help support the students and the work that we talked about earlier for resiliency and confidence and, you know, making sure that those students stick to those courses. Should a student decide, you know, part of the way through high school that they're not sure that the pathway that they selected is the right one for them, the navigators are also the ones that can help figure out, well, okay, the courses you've taken so far will also align with these things that were also in your U-Science. And so those navigators are like, they're personal guides. That's why we called them navigators. They are guides. They're not counselors. And so they work for the district. So we were able to use some of the funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to help fund a navigator for one of our districts. We used part of another investment that we have at Learn to Earn Dayton to fund a navigator for a second district. And we are, you know, when we think long term about this, those navigators are a critical element of our design. And we have to get to a place where we can influence policymakers and state departments about the redirect of some public funds to have these positions. In Ohio, workforce is number one priority. And if it's number one priority, then making sure we have navigators leading and guiding students to their careers, it really has to be something that we have to think differently about.
I just really appreciate the intentional way that you all are thinking about your community. And for you, for Learn to Earn Dayton, the community is not just the students in the schools, the K-12, but truly the K through beyond, and thinking through, you know, how do we ensure that all of our community is well? And so it seems like that is a focus, and I truly appreciate that. And then at the beginning, a couple of words that you said was influence and impact. And based on this conversation, and I hope our listeners pick up on that as well, that's exactly what it feels like you all are having in a very intentional way. So just, you know, as we think about Learn to Earn Dayton, the things that, you know, I will always associate will be those words, as well as trust and relationships, and just really high quality programming in a way that cares for your community in a meaningful way. So thank you both so much for taking the time to have this conversation and allowing us to learn more about the great things that are happening at Learn to Earn Dayton.
Thanks for tuning into the Getting Smart podcast today. We want this podcast to be actionable, insightful, and a great way to learn about what's next in learning. In order to stay on the cutting edge, we need people in the field to tell us what they're hearing, what they're wanting, and what they're needing to learn more about. Got a topic or a guest in mind? Send your recommendations to me, Mason@gettingsmart.com. And if you like what you're hearing, don't forget to leave a review in Apple Podcasts or subscribe wherever you listen. Feel free to share the podcast on social media using the hashtag GSPodcasts. Thanks so much.